From Pacifica Network, this is Democracy Now! Countdown to the showdown, the battle for the White House.
We have uncovered a secret document suggesting that the Republican Party in Florida is prepared to harass and block the black vote.
Investigative reporter Greg Pallast exposes yet another voter scandal in Florida. His piece has aired in Britain. Today we break the silence and air his piece for the first time in the United States. Then, as all eyes focus on the race for the White House, we'll take a look at some of the closest Senate races across the country, among them Florida, where the case of a jailed Palestinian professor, Sami Alarian, has become the main focus of the race between Betty Castor and Mel Martinez.
The fact of the matter is that what we have here is a situation of not just one person, but a terrorist cell operating at the University of South Florida. One of these people was a professor there for two terms, and the next job, the next place on his resume is as the head of Islamic Jihad in Damascus, Syria.
When news reports first surfaced about possible activities of Mr. Alarian, I went to the FBI. I worked with the FBI. I am the person that shut down the think tank. I ensured the safety of the campus.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman. Palestinian leader Yasser Arafat reportedly collapsed and briefly lost consciousness yesterday, raising new concerns about his health. Last night, Palestinian officials said Arafat was fighting for his life, but today aides say he is in stable but serious condition. He reportedly performed morning prayers today, ate a light breakfast. He sent a message from his bedside saying he was, quote, okay. The 75-year-old Arafat serves as the president of the Palestinian Authority and chair of the Palestine Liberation Organization. He's been the international face of the Palestinian resistance for over three decades. In 1994, he won the Nobel Peace Prize. Family members, colleagues, and doctors have rushed to his Ramallah compound, where he's been holed up for the past 3 years due to travel restrictions put in place by the Israeli government. Israeli Prime Minister General Ariel Sharon has now agreed to permit Arafat to be flown abroad for medical treatment, but questions remain if Israel would allow Arafat to return. Numerous questions have been raised as to who would succeed Arafat if he becomes incapacitated or dies. He has refused to name a successor. Some news organizations report a three-person panel has been empowered to temporarily run the Palestinian Authority. According to the BBC, the Palestinian Authority's constitution calls for the speaker of the Palestinian Legislative Council, Rawi Fatu, to succeed him. But the constitution has yet to be fully ratified. In election news, as many as 58,000 absentee ballots have gone missing in the heavily Democratic Broward County in Florida. The ballots were said to have been mailed 2 weeks ago, but many have disappeared. Broward County is blaming the Postal Service, but the post office denies that it's its fault. Now county officials are attempting to get ballots sent out in time to voters. In the 2000 presidential elections, Al Gore won 67% of the vote in Broward County. In Ohio, a federal judge has temporarily blocked the Republican Party from challenging the voting rights of 35,000 people ahead of the election. Local election boards were preparing to hold hearings in the next few days to decide on the eligibility of the voters in question. The Democratic Party hailed the decision. The head of its voter protection program said, quote, "The Republican assault on tens of thousands of Ohio voters was an unprecedented effort to intimidate voters, especially minorities, but it has backfired." But Republican attorneys say the party will now be forced to challenge the voters on Election Day at the polls in order to prevent voting fraud. In Colorado, the Denver Post has been deluged with complaints from readers after the paper endorsed President Bush in its Sunday edition. According to an editor's note that appeared in the newspaper, more than 700 readers contacted the paper about the endorsement, and every letter sent to the Post was critical of the paper's endorsement of Bush. In other election news, a Florida man has been arrested for attempting to run over Congresswoman Katherine Harris in her hometown in Sarasota, Florida. Harris is the former Republican Secretary of State of Florida who played a major role in the 2000 recount. The driver, Barry Seltzer, denied trying to kill her, but he did drive his Cadillac up onto the sidewalk near where she stood. He said, quote, "I was exercising my political expression. I did not run them down. I scare them a little." Meanwhile, the Sun Sentinel reports another Florida man was arrested yesterday after he put a screwdriver to his girlfriend's throat and threatened her because she's supporting John Kerry. Four former British detainees held at Guantanamo sued the U.S. government yesterday, alleging they were tortured at the military prison. They're each seeking $10 million in damages. Meanwhile, the United Nations official charged with monitoring incidents of torture has sharply criticized the Bush administration and the so-called war on terror. Theo van Boven Wednesday presented a report that stated, quote, "The absolute nature of the prohibition of torture and other forms of ill treatment means that no exceptional circumstances whatsoever, whether a state of war or a threat of war, internal political instability, or any other public emergency may be invoked as a justification for torture." It went on to say, quote, "No executive, legislative, administrative, or judicial measure authorizing recourse to torture and cruel, inhuman, or degrading treatment or punishment can be considered as lawful under international law." The report did not name the United States, but the New York Times reports the message was aimed squarely at the Bush administration. The UN report comes a day after Amnesty International issued a scathing report that found that, quote, "war mentality of the Bush administration had led to the government to torture detainees and commit other human rights abuses." Amnesty said the violations of international law were, quote, "due to a failure of human rights leadership at the highest levels of government." In news from Iraq, the website Iraq Body Count has released a study that estimates as many as 616 Iraqi civilians were killed in April during the U.S. siege of Fallujah. A total of about 800 Iraqis died in the U.S.-backed attack. Until now, no group has attempted to calculate the civilian cost of the siege. Meanwhile, at least three people died in Fallujah today after a U.S. bombing that destroyed several houses. Meanwhile, the New York Times is reporting a major new U.S.-led attack on Fallujah is imminent. The Times said the offensive would likely be the largest and potentially the riskiest operation since the end of major combat. In other Iraq news, some 800 British forces are heading to Baghdad at the request of the U.S. to help fight the Iraqi resistance. By patrolling parts of Baghdad, the British troops will allow some U.S. forces to leave that area to fight in Fallujah. Also today, Al Jazeera has aired a new video that showed a Polish woman who allegedly has been taken hostage in Iraq. The Iraqi group that seized her demanded the release of all Iraqi female prisoners and for Polish troops to leave Iraq. And the Washington Post is reporting the American Chemistry Council has given the Environmental Protection Agency $2 million to study the impact of pesticides and household chemicals on young children. The council represents nearly 150 chemical and plastics manufacturers. The Environmental Working Group has protested the council's actions. The group's president, Kenneth Cook, has argued against allowing an industry lobbying group to fund a government study.
If the earth could fly away, could you see her flying straight through space and time, leaving all humankind behind? If she could fly away, if she could fly away, so far away. If the earth could run away, every creeping thing. They have never been her foe, never harmed her blessed soul. If she could ride all day, if she could ride all day, so far away, then she'd be running for life. Oh, she'd be running for life, running for a blessed life. Oh, she'd be running for life. She'd be running for life, running for her blessed life. If the earth could up and walk away, could you see her calling for all the oceans and the seas, all the rivers and the streams, all the whales and fish, every reptile that exists? They have never been her foe, never harmed her blessed soul.
Battered Earth, Sweet Honey in the Rock, here on Democracy Now!, the countdown to the showdown, the battle for the White House. I'm Amy Goodman here with Juan Gonzalez.
And good day to all of our listeners and viewers around the country. And Amy, this on this weekend, the eve of the election, the both candidates, John Kerry and George Bush, will be on the most popular show in Spanish language television, Sábado Gigante, on Saturday night, which is it's also the longest running variety show in the history of television. 42 years it's been on the air, and it's a strange show if you've never seen it. It's a mixture of bikini clad girls, audience giveaways, and raunchy slapstick comedy. And so it's an unusual venue for Kerry and Bush, but they'll both be on in long interviews with Don Francisco, the Chilean-born host of the show, who's been on the show for 42 years and is a legend in the Latino community. And I mentioned it in a column at today's Daily News because most people don't know that Univision is run by one of the biggest Bush supporters in the country, Gerald Perenchio, who's given millions to the Republican Party over the last several years and was a Bush pioneer, a Bush ranger, and in March sponsored a party for Bush at his Southern California mansion where he raised $3 million in one night. So it'll be interesting to see if Don Francisco keeps it even or in his discussions with both Kerry and Bush or whether
Kerry and Edwards or both?
Kerry and Bush. Kerry and Bush as well.
And a new poll has come out.
Yes, last night Univision Television with the Washington Post announced a new poll of the national Latino vote, which shows Kerry ahead 59% to 30% among Latinos nationwide, which should be a cause for worry for the Bush administration because they were looking to get at least 40%. However, Kerry is actually running behind Al Gore on the Latino vote, and it's showing still about 9% undecided in the Latino community. So obviously the appearance on Don Francisco's show may have a big impact in states like Florida, New Mexico, Colorado, and Nevada that have large Latino votes.
Hmm. Well, so we're going to move in quickly to our program today as we continue on this issue of the showdown. Juan?
Well, concerns continue to mount across the country over the fairness of next Tuesday's election. Already problems have emerged in several states. In one county in Ohio, more than 900 registered voters have been told they must appear in court on Saturday to defend their voter eligibility or risk losing their chance to vote. In Wisconsin, scores of students report that their local election board says it has no record of their voter registration. In Nevada, fallout continues after reports that a Republican-funded group registering voters had destroyed possibly hundreds of voter forms of people who had registered as Democrats. But nowhere is concern greater than in the state of Florida, the epicenter of the theft of the election in 2000. Yesterday, the deputy election supervisor in one of Florida's most populous counties admitted that some 60,000 absentee ballots are missing. Broward County election official Gisela Salas said the matter is under investigation by law enforcement agencies. In 2000, it was Broward County that gave Al Gore his strongest support in the state of Florida. The U.S. Postal Service says it has investigators trying to find the missing ballots, which constitute about 5% of Broward County's electoral vote.
This comes as investigative reporter Greg Pallast obtained a secret document from inside the Bush headquarters in Florida. The document suggests a plan, possibly in violation of the law, to disrupt voting in Florida's African-American voting districts. Two emails prepared for the executive director of the Bush campaign in Florida and the campaign's national research director in Washington, D.C., contain a 15-page so-called caging list. It lists more than 1,800 names and addresses of voters in predominantly black and traditionally Democratic areas of Jacksonville. Pallas broke the story on BBC's Newsnight in Britain. Today, we broadcast the story in its entirety for the first time in the United States on U.S. television and radio here. Here is Greg Pallas' report.
I'm happy, I'm excited, and I'm ready to vote.
Willie Steen's on his way to vote, he hopes. In the last election, he was one of thousands of black citizens stopped from voting when they were falsely tagged as criminals.
He went in a place to vote, and I was with my son, and it's about 40, 50 other people around, and I got up there to vote, and they told me that I was a convicted felony. I told the young lady that I never been arrested before.
Enthusiastic Americans like Willie can now vote early in the weeks before Election Day. Willie sued Governor Jeb Bush after Jeb's officials were caught playing games with the voter lists, dropping legal voters, especially black ones, who overwhelmingly vote for Democrats.
Hey, how you doing?
Moving right along.
Yes, we are.
This is as far as Willie got last time.
Hey, sir, did you used to name it Valley Tree?
Yeah.
Will he be blocked yet again? We leave Willie in Tampa to go just past Disney World to Faith World. Here in Orlando, the faithful who believe they were cheated last time pray it won't happen again. In the last election, 1 million black votes were not counted.
The Reverend Jesse Jackson. You don't have to vote the way I vote. Well, I shouldn't steal your vote. The winner shouldn't lose, and the loser shouldn't win.
Jackson fears that the Republicans have some new plan to block the black vote, not just the fake felon scam used last time on Willie Steen.
There are more Mr. Steens out there. And now you have a case of this as a guy who just may be a kind of biopsy, a kind of political biopsy of a cancer that is much more widespread than just one example. You can't forget the stealing of your birthright. You can't forget disenfranchisement of your vote.
100 miles away, in the riverside town of Jacksonville, we may have found the evidence of the plan Jesse Jackson fears, something called a caging list, which could capture black voters. This is a list of nearly 2,000 voters in the black neighborhoods of Jacksonville who appear to have errors in their mailing addresses. The list was specially prepared for George Bush's campaign.
There is no doubt in my mind that with your help, we'll carry Florida again and win a great victory on November the 2nd.
Every one of these has to be hand-entered.
And we asked Ion Sancho why the Republicans might put together such a list. Sancho is a Democrat, but he's also one of the most respected and experienced of Florida's county elections supervisors.
The only thing that I can think of African-American voters listed like this, these might be potential individuals that will be challenged if they attempt to vote on Election Day.
American states allow political parties to place their people right inside the polling station, like this one in Jacksonville. They can point to a voter and challenge their right to vote. Voters will be turned away with provisional ballots, which are usually just thrown out. Political parties rarely use challenges because they can bring voting to a halt.
In Leon County, for example, we have not had one challenge voter in the 16 years that I've been the supervisor of elections. Because again, if you challenge voters, you really must do so with concrete, hard evidence, not your opinion. And this process can be used to slow down the voting process, to cause chaos on election day, and quite frankly, to discourage voters from voting.
Do the Republicans have a plan to launch thousands of challenges on November 2nd and bring voting in Florida's black Democratic precincts to a standstill?
This is the caging list, and this is where it was sent to the office of Brett Doster. He's the executive director of the George W. Bush for President campaign in Florida. Let's ask his team about it.
I asked Republican spokeswoman Mindy Tucker Fletcher if they had a strategy to challenge these black voters on election day.
I can't tell you right now. I'm not part of that strategy, but okay. This was not done in order to create a challenge list, as you, I think, were trying to get to.
But they accuse Democrats of registering voters illegally, so Republicans must counterattack.
So you're saying your poll workers will be instructed to challenge people to say they should have a provisional ballot?
In where it's stated in the law, yeah.
Are you worried that that'll gum up the voting procedures for legal voters?
By enforcing the laws?
Well, that's a good question.
I imagine even the people in line would want the laws applied.
The law appears to be applied in a curious way in Florida. Across the road from the Jacksonville voting station, I spied someone hiding away a camera in a black SUV with blacked-out windows. He was disguised in a tourist uniform, complete with shorts, baseball cap, and open-toed sandals. He'd been filming every voter. I thought I'd say hello.
This isn't just a hobby. You're just not doing it as a volunteer.
No.
Okay.
No. So, I'm an investigator. This is my career.
So are you a licensed investigator? So a professional agency, then. It's not. Right. You're not like some free, you know, just some guy who decided
he's going to
do something. Because
he remembered that his name was okay. Doug, but he couldn't remember who he was working for. The local congresswoman had a suggestion.
The Republicans, once again, are trying to intimidate African-American voters. This car have been here since the 18th in front of the supervisor's office all day, and they have been filming.
Back in Tallahassee, another election scam surfaced which could sabotage thousands of voter registrations. It targeted students with liberal views. Elections supervisor Ion Sancho discovered the scam struck close to home.
This, for example, is a copy of my stepdaughter's voter registration from Orlando. And it is clear that her own handwriting filled in blocks 2 through 15. Apparently, a petition form was placed over the top of a voter registration form. It purported to tell the citizen they were signing a petition to legalize medical marijuana. The citizen filled it in, thinking that's what they were doing. And then after the voter had left, the individual fraudulently filled out lines 1, the party change, making them a Republican now, and then fraudulently signed it, and then turned the application over to the election administrator. This form changed the voter's registration from Tallahassee to Orlando. And if this voter had not known me and turned this information over to me, she may have been disenfranchised when she attempted to vote.
Is it a crime to misregister someone in that way?
It is a third-degree felony to do this. It is an illegal act.
And the Republicans now admit it was their operatives who collected these thousands of suspect registrations, though the party denies it committed fraud. Civil rights experts in Washington fear the threat to a free and fair election is severe and unprecedented. Ralph Nies is commander-in-chief of an army of 6,000 lawyers who will take up battle stations on Election Day to protect voters from dirty tricks.
This is the nerve center.
Right.
There'll be 56 of our field offices in the 17 states.
and then there'll be 38 legal command centers where the majority of the lawyers will be. And there'll be a law student or lawyer at every precinct. But if there are real problems, we've got mobile traveling vans of lawyers who will go to the precinct and make a decision.
They'll keep their eyes open for mass challenges by poll watchers paid for by the Republican Party. It may be disruptive, but it's perfectly legal to challenge voters. But if you target the challenges at black districts like Jacksonville, you're breaking federal law.
You cannot target districts with respect to challenging voters if race is a consideration. Doesn't even have to be the major factor. You cannot target on the basis of race.
Thanks.
Back in Tampa, Willie Steen finally gets to vote. But this happy ending was thanks only to Newsnight. The day before, he was still listed as a criminal felon. But when we turned up with cameras, his status magically changed to upright citizen who can vote unchallenged. But what about the thousands of others without TV cameras who will have to overcome the new tricks, caging lists, registration games, and more in the 2004 Battle of the Ballot?
Investigative report by Greg Palast for BBC's Newsnight, first aired here on Democracy Now! In the United States. This is Democracy Now! When we come back, Greg Palast joins us live in our studio. Stay with us.
It might have been Camelot for Jack and Jacqueline, but on the Che Guevara highway, filling up with gasoline. Fidel Castro's brother spies a rich lady who's crying over the luxury's disappointment. So he walks over and he's trying to sympathize with her, but he thinks that he should warn her that the third world is just around the corner. Soviet Union, a scientist is blinded by the resumption of nuclear testing, and he is reminded that Dr. Robert Oppenheimer's optimism fell.
Billy Bragg, Waiting for the Great Leap Forward, here on Democracy Now! Countdown to the showdown, the battle for the White House. I'm Amy Goodman here with Juan Gonzalez. Our guest is investigative reporter Greg Palast. Juan?
Well, Greg, congratulations on another terrific report. I guess the people in England and Europe are more informed about the shenanigans going on in Florida than we here in the United States.
Well, they're absolutely horrified. You have to understand, they're watching black cars with blacked out windows surveilling black voters. You're seeing challenge lists that to the rest of the world. The reaction in Europe to this report, this led the BBC News in Europe, and the reaction was the U.S. is running election like Zimbabwe.
Didn't this happen in 2000 that your reports first exposing what was going on in Florida appeared in Britain and Europe, and the U.S. press didn't touch it for
only
months?
I broke the story on BBC and in The Guardian that tens of thousands of voters were falsely listed as felons and barred from voting. Basically, it was black people who were only guilty of voting while black. And in fact, in the film, we have one of those people, Willie Steen. And I want to emphasize is that because the Republican election supervisor was tipped off of our coming down with the cameras to watch him try to vote, even though the state says the man is innocent.
He was doing early voting.
Yeah, he was doing early voting to that 1 hour before he voted, they changed his status from felon to upright citizens so he could vote. But there's still, the U.S. press hasn't covered this.
And who was it who tipped him off? You told us off camera. Will you tell us off camera?
One of the major newspapers in America foolishly still not covering the story. It's very hard to cover the story. You have to understand BBC has been threatened
by
the Republican National Commission.
A reporter from that major newspaper?
I can't say.
Okay. It's a major newspaper in New York, isn't it?
Yeah, I understand.
What about BBC? You're talking about being threatened.
Yeah, that's why I'm so grateful that you've run the report today, because the Republican National Committee is threatening BBC, as they've done before with my reports, saying that if Greg Palast is on the air, that there will be no interviews for the network from the Republican National Committee, which is, of course, cutting off the kind of air supply of a news organization. And so you can immediately see why American news organizations won't touch the story, which is basically that the Republican parties have a hit list of black people that they're going to try to wipe out on Election Day, stop them from voting. And in particular, this has the effect not only of intimidating the voters, eliminating voters, but in places like Jacksonville, where 3 and 4 hour waits are expected, this could entirely sabotage the voting operation. Understand, this is illegal if they are targeting black folk. It is against federal law.
We saw that scene of Congressmember Corinne Brown in Jacksonville. Explain what she was saying.
Well, what happened was our BBC cameras were there to interview her about voter harassment. And it just so happened that we caught a guy in this blacked out car with a telephoto lens filming each of the voters going into the early voting booth. Now, it's mostly black voters who are doing early voting. And this may be related to this so-called caging list to try to knock out the black vote.
And also the segment where you went into the fake registrations or the ones that where signatures had been falsified. Could you how extensive was that?
And explain
massive.
Who this guy is.
Okay. What you saw was a guy, Ion Sancho, who's probably considered the most experienced and respected of election supervisors in Florida. Unfortunately, my one mistake was to identify him as a Democrat because the Republicans told me he was a Democrat. He's very independent, not affiliated with any party. He's also asked the parties not to challenge voters on Election Day. The supervisors have said it's really never been done in Florida history, and this basically is an attempt to stop the entire voting process, bring it to a halt. As to registrations, what happened was is that students, mostly Democrats, students filled out petition forms for medical use of marijuana. As it turns out, they were signing the back of registration forms without knowing it, re-registering themselves as Republicans. This was definitely tied to a Republican paid operation. At least 4,000 of these forged registrations, which is a felony to forge registration, have been found. And Jeb Bush's Department of Law Enforcement says that they don't have time for the next few weeks to get around to arresting the forgers. It's just this is just the beginning of the game.
And what does it mean that they have now registered as Republican? Can they still vote?
No, they can't. They've now double registered. They, especially in the case of they only got caught because the election supervisor's daughter was caught up in the scam. And so if she'd put in an absentee ballot, if this wasn't caught in her case, her ballot would be thrown out.
And he also said that they were being re-registered in another county, therefore creating problems in terms
of
their...
In other words, basically setting up the voter to have their vote voided because they're double registered. So, you know, and again, this is just one of the several games we are finding. For example, the felon purge, which our press here has said is over with, believe me, it ain't. Most of the people, the 93,000 people tagged in the first round as felons who are legal voters, mostly Democrats, 4-1 Democrats, just so you know, 4-1 Democrat registered. Most of those are still purged. They're still playing games with these people. And, then you've got you've also got games with absentee ballots. One thing that's not come out in the story about Broward County, the ballots missing, you have to understand, Jeb Bush fired a black female Democrat who was election supervisor, replaced her with his own appointee, who is suddenly now not sending out absentee ballots in a heavily Democratic area.
This is in Broward.
Broward. Mm-hmm. And what you have is Jeb Bush appointing Republicans to replace Democrats who are then impeding the vote, as in Jacksonville, where a Republican was just appointed to take over, and he's making it almost impossible for black people to vote. Jacksonville, by the way, is the largest physical city in the United States with one polling place for early voting, again, to stop the churches and Jesse Jackson and his group from bringing in thousands of voters to vote.
So this, again, this really top news, as many as 58,000 absentee ballots have gone missing in Broward County. Ballots said to have been mailed 2 weeks ago, but somehow they've disappeared. Now there's a lot of finger pointing. The county is blaming the postal service. The post office said, no, we didn't get them.
No, well, you have to understand the games that have been played. Teresa Lepore, Madam Butterfly, if you remember, from Palm Beach, who is an ally of Jeb Bush, was just defeated a few weeks ago in her own reelection. She will be counting votes still, however, in November. In the last race a couple weeks ago, she counted 37,000 votes from 31,000 absentee ballots. It was like fishes and loaves. The problem is if she had gone the other way, we would not have caught her if she had counted 31,000 votes out of 37,000 ballots. Do not, I recommend people don't use absentee ballots. You don't know where they're going. You don't know what they're doing with them. That is one of the great scams of this election. And the thing is that it's all aimed racially. And you have to understand who are people on the caging list that the Republicans appear to be ready to challenge. They include people whose addresses they claim cannot be verified. I verified some of these addresses. You know, I found 50 guys shipped out from the military, so their addresses changed from Jacksonville, from the poor neighbors of Jacksonville, to Baghdad. And that's and they're going to challenge these soldiers' votes. That
How'd
looks
you
like
get
the
this
plan.
Caging list?
if I said that, I wouldn't receive any more of these lists. But if let me tell you, if anyone else has any more lists or any other good items, go to gregpalace.com. I love it, especially if it's marked secret or confidential on the top.
And there's no reason, obviously, to assume that if this kind of situation is occurring in Florida, that it's not occurring in other states as well.
Oh, I got to tell you, I've been writing a story called
other
"The Other Battleground
Floridas. States."
New Mexico, there's non-count of vote on the in Hispanic areas and in Native areas, Native American areas. Colorado, they're starting a new felon purge days before the election, which is against federal law by the Republican Secretary of State. In fact, in Harper's this month's issue, I've gone through how the change in machinery to computers is going to cost hundreds of thousands of African-American votes, Democratic Party votes. We figure our analysis is that in southern Florida alone, the change to computers will cost 27,000 votes, will cost John Kerry a net of 27,000 votes. So it's even the machinery. We have Hispanic precincts in New Mexico, which in the last race showed no vote at all for president. And the response I get from elections officials is, well, some people can't make up their mind. What's happening is in poor areas, they're being given crap machines, just like they get crap hospitals and crap schools. And they know that this means that a lot of votes are simply lost in the machinery, whether it's computers or punch cards, you name it. So you have a loss of, by the U.S. Civil Rights Commission statisticians I've been working with, we calculate a loss of about 1 million black and minority votes in the U.S. lost in the machines. I mean, this is tremendous electoral thumb on the scale when we're going into this Tuesday. So it is nationwide. I'm concentrating on Florida because Florida will be Florida again. Mm-hmm. But look to, if you're going to see this election shoplifted, New Mexico, Colorado, Ohio, those are going to be states where you can't trust the vote.
Well, we want to thank you very much, Greg Palast, for joining us, investigative reporter, with this explosive report.
Thank you very much.
When we come back from our break, we're going to look at the close Senate races around the country, and then we're going to hone in on one, and that's what's happening in Florida. Stay with us.
Yeah, election time's coming. Who you gonna vote for? Yeah. If I was president, uh-huh, I'd get elected on Friday, yeah, assassinated on Saturday, buried on Sunday, yeah, they go back to work on Monday. If I was president, if I was president, if I was president, yeah. Instead of spending billions on the war, I can use that money so I can feed the poor. Cause I know some so poor. When it rains, that's when they shower, scream and fight the power. That's when the vulture devours. If I was president, I'd get elected on Friday, assassinated on Saturday, buried on Sunday, they go back to work on Monday. I know some soldiers that sleep but they can't dream. Wake up with screams, sounds of M16. So take this medal of honor for your bravery. I wish you the best, kid. You and your family.
Wycliffe Jean, president, here on Democracy Now!, the countdown to the showdown, the battle for the White House. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
Well, with just 5 days to go before the November 2nd election, President Bush and John Kerry are focusing their campaign efforts only on states designated as key battleground areas in their bid for the presidency. While the race for the White House appears too close to call, the battle for the Senate is even more uncertain.
And today we're going to take a look at these races around the country. We're going to take a look at what's happening in Florida, what's happening in Colorado, what's happening in a number of states. Republicans currently rule the 100-member Senate over Democrats by 51 to 48, with one independent who usually votes Democratic. Heading into the home stretch of the 2004 election, the two-party tug of war over Capitol Hill essentially comes down to eight Senate seats. Five of the eight currently held by Democrats: South Dakota, Florida, Louisiana, North Carolina, and South Carolina. The GOP holds the other three: Alaska, Colorado, and Oklahoma. Today we take a look at some of these closely fought Senate races that will determine which party controls the Senate after November 2nd. Ron Fauché is our guest, contributor to Campaigns and Elections magazine and producer of the Political Odds Maker, an online elections handicapping service. He teaches at the Graduate School of Political Management at George Washington University. Welcome to Democracy Now!
Thank you. Happy to be here.
It's very good to have you with us. Well, why don't you run through the key races?
Well, basically, you have six Democratic seats that are highly vulnerable and at risk right now. The Georgia seat, which will probably go Republican. Then you have five seats, Louisiana, North Carolina, Florida, South Dakota, and South Carolina, that could go either way. Those are all Democratic seats. The problem for Democrats is all five of those races are in what you would call Bush red states, states that President Bush carried 4 years ago, which means they're not in particularly favorable territory for the Democrats, although they have a shot to hold some of them, perhaps even most of them. Then you have five Republican seats that are in trouble. The top one, of course, is Illinois, and that one's gone. The Democrats should easily pick that up. And then you have four seats now that are Republican and are very much at risk. One is Alaska. The other is Colorado. Then you have Oklahoma. And in recent weeks, Kentucky has been put on that list because of the behavior of the Republican incumbent.
I'd like to focus on South Dakota, what's being called the most important race outside the president's race that involves the Senate Minority Leader Tom Daschle.
Well, you have Tom Daschle, who is the minority leader. He's a target for Republicans all over the country. He's a very powerful, smart politician who's been able to get elected and reelected in a conservative Republican state. He's being challenged by John Thune, who is a former member of the House, elected at large. John Thune ran a very strong losing race for the U.S. Senate 2 years ago. He only lost it by about 500 votes. So it's a very tight race. Of the polls that came out in the last few days, one shows Daschle ahead by 2 points. One shows Thune ahead by 4 points. So this is a very close election that could go either way. President Bush should do very well in the state, which might provide some wind behind Thune's back. But if Daschle is defeated, and it is possible that he could lose this one, it probably would be the big Senate story of the night.
And the Indian vote is considered absolutely key. Tim Johnson, that 500 votes he won by in the last election for Senate, coming from Native Americans, particularly from the Pine Ridge Reservation, and then they passed in South Dakota, the Republicans, the bill that required ID, but because you can't require ID for voting, they have a kind of amendment to it that says, well, then they would have to sign an affidavit if they didn't have ID. So there's a lot of concern about challenging of votes in this election.
Well, there was a lot of controversy about those votes when they were cast last time and how they were cast and whether proper identifications were there. So this has been a running controversy for a couple of years, and my guess is if this race is close, it's going to be a running controversy that goes well beyond November 2nd.
A What about Kentucky? You've got the Republican, the baseball icon there, Jim Bunning. And what's the situation in Kentucky right now?
Well, basically, the last nonpartisan media poll showed Jim Bunning, the Republican incumbent, with about a 6-point lead. The Democrats put out a poll a couple of days ago that showed Bunning's lead down to 1%. You know, here you have an incumbent who was avoiding debates and made some unusual, really strange public statements over the last several weeks, and it kept going on and on.
Can you talk about that? It's more than strange. I mean, when you say avoiding debates, he didn't show up at the debate that he was there for the previous debate. He apparently didn't allow anyone in, and it turns out he was doing it from a remote location with a teleprompter. Right. There's a lot of questions about his mental stability right now.
Right, and doing it from a remote location with a teleprompter was a clear violation of the rules of the debate, and there was a big dispute over that within the state. And a number of newspaper editorials have questioned the senator's both physical and mental fitness to be in public office. Whether that's true or not, I have no idea. But nevertheless, the way he has handled himself, handled this campaign, took a race that was basically a pretty easy Republican win a couple of months ago and turned it into a very close election. Now, Bunning still has the lead, and he's probably still the favorite, but any time a candidate sort of collapses a couple of weeks before an election the way his campaign seemed to, you know, it certainly has the opportunity to build back up and to strengthen back up again to getting past the finish line. But I think it's a big question mark, and it's an important race because, you know, when one party only has a one-vote lead with a Senate majority, as the Republicans do, it doesn't take much to flip this thing. And we have right now...
Well, if I can ask you, what about his opponent, Bunning's opponent?
Well, Bunning's opponent, I think, largely he was an unknown figure in state politics up until this point. And so he hasn't really been that big of a factor in terms of whether people are voting for him or not. At this stage of the game, it's the attention is really on Bunning right now.
And that's State Senator Daniel Mangiardo, right?
Yes.
And he was considered as much as 20 percentage points behind
right.
Bunning
exactly.
At the beginning of the campaign.
Exactly.
So this has been a really dramatic change, hasn't it?
It's been the biggest turnaround in any Senate race we've seen this year.
It may not help that Bunning is saying that he thinks he's being pursued by al-Qaeda, and he accused his opponent of looking like the son of Saddam Hussein. Finally, Colorado, just a brief hit on Colorado description.
Well, Colorado's an open Senate seat. The incumbent Republican Ben Nighthorse Campbell is not running for re-election. The Democratic candidate, Attorney General Salazar, has a lead in the recent polls that have come out in the last few days. He is running against Pete Coors, the Republican candidate who was known for his affiliation with the Coors Beer Company. It's a very close election. Colorado generally leans Republican in these kinds of races. They had a big Republican win 2 years ago when the incumbent, who looked like he was going to be defeated, pulled out on election day. Surprise victory, so you never know what's going to happen there. But as it stands now, Salazar has a small lead in this race.
Salazar would stand to be the first Hispanic in the Senate since Montoya, New Mexico in the 60s. So I would assume that this will turn out a large Hispanic vote at the polls in Colorado, won't it?
I would think it would, and the last polls in the presidential race are showing it very, very close. Now, Colorado is a state that President Bush carried with some points to spare 4 years ago, and John Kerry is doing well in Colorado now, as is the Democratic candidate for the Senate.
Ron Fischow, in 2000, you predicted every single race right except Oregon, which was about a 1 percentage point off, went to the Democrat Ron Wyden. But right now, your prediction for the Senate and then for the president?
Well, right now I'm still predicting that the Republicans will maintain control of the Senate, hold the 51 seats they have. It's possible they could go up to 52. It's possible they could go down to 50, assuming that the president's reelected. As it stands now, we still have President Bush as a very, very, very slight favorite in the presidential race that has slipped some in recent days. And I think this presidential race is unsettled, and I don't think it's won or lost yet by either side, and I think it's still going on.
Well, we want to thank you for being with us. Ron Fouché, contributor to Campaigns and Elections magazine, producer of Political Odds Maker, an online elections handicapping service. This is Democracy Now! As we turn now to what's perhaps the closest Senate race of the year, and that's in Florida.
The U.S. Senate seat opened up after Democratic Senator Bob Graham announced he was stepping down following three terms in office. On the Democratic ticket is former State Education Commissioner Betty Castor. On the Republican side is Mel Martinez, President Bush's former Secretary of Housing and Urban Development. A recent survey showed the two candidates locked in a dead heat, while issues such as the Iraq War, minimum wage, and Social Security have been hotly debated. One subject has clearly dominated the race, the case of Sami Al-Aryan.
Sami Al-Aryan was a tenured Palestinian professor of computer science at the University of South Florida. While Betty Castor was president of the university, Al-Aryan was accused of illegally raising money for Palestinian militant groups. Castor placed Al-Aryan on paid administrative leave, but when no charges were filed, she eventually reinstated him. In February 2003, after Castor left USF, Al-Aryan was arrested by the FBI. The Justice Department handed down a sweeping 50-count indictment accusing him of masterminding a terrorist support group that thrived in South Florida for nearly 20 years. Sami Al-Aryan has been imprisoned since then, awaiting trial on charges of racketeering and conspiracy to commit murder. He has denied all the charges. At the first televised senatorial debate, we're going to listen to a clip between Betty Castor and Mel Martinez. Tim Russert was the MC. Mel Martinez answered his question.
Fact of the matter is that what we have here is a situation of not just one person, but a terrorist cell operating at the University of South Florida. One of these people was a professor there for two terms, and the next job, the next place on his resume is as the head of Islamic Jihad in Damascus, Syria.
When news reports first surfaced about possible activities of Mr. Al-Aryan, I went to the FBI. I worked with the FBI. I am the person that shut down the think tank. I ensured the safety of the campus, and I ultimately put him on administrative leave or suspension or whatever you would have it.
An excerpt of a debate between the senatorial candidates of Florida, Mel Martinez and Betty Castor. Joining us on the line right now to talk about this race is John Sugg. He is senior editor for Creative Loafing, which is an Atlanta-based alternative weekly newspaper. He's been closely following the case of Sami Al-Aryan for several years, comes from Florida himself. Welcome to Democracy Now!
Hi, glad to be here.
It's good to have you with us.
One correction in what she said. When the groups that Al-Aryan's accused of raising money for, at the time that he was active, those groups were not illegal to have raised money for, which is one of the government's major problems in its case, and the government has many problems in its case. But the government's had to come up with a superseded indictment which drops a number of the counts against Al-Aryan and admits that at least nine telephone numbers he's accused of having made his terrorist plans on, that he neither owned those telephone numbers nor ever had access to them. So it's like one of these, you know, Ashcroft has yet to convict anybody in court in front of a jury after 9/11 of terrorist things. It's good to keep that in mind when you talk about who's a terrorist in Florida.
So summarize this debate, the contest for us in Florida.
Well, Betty Castor, Florida since the 1960s has had a long tradition of good governance. It was a bright spot in the South when the rest of the South was still in the political dark ages. Bob Graham, Lawton Childs, Leroy Collins, a lot of these people were the leaders of a progressive South. And Betty Castor is well within that tradition. She comes out of that same tradition. It's not a particularly left tradition. It's very pragmatic, but overall very progressive. Mel Martinez, you know, who was considered a moderate, you know, he's been guarding himself from the right. You know, he fears, you know, in 6 years being attacked as being too moderate, so he's gone out there, you know, with a real right-wing attack. The simple fact is, El Arian was embraced by George Bush. Karl Rove invited Al Arian to the White House. There's this famous picture of George Bush posing with Samuel Arian. Bill Clinton met with Al Arian. Al Arian gave him materials on his cause. Al Arian was twice invited to be a guest speaker at Central Command to talk to 400 or 500 intelligence and military officers about Islam. So, you know, it's all this is, and as a matter of fact, Al Arian was a consultant to the FBI during the first Gulf War as to what the mood of the Muslim community would be as the war was launched. So, which doesn't make him an informant for the FBI, by the way.
How has Martinez, because obviously both Karl Rove and President Bush really wanted Martinez to run rather than Catherine Harris, who had interest in running for that seat because that would have polarized the vote in Florida for the presidency even more. How has Martinez handled the issue of the White House's clampdown on travel to Cuba? Because this apparently has hurt the president in the younger Cuban community in South Florida. How's Martinez handled this issue?
Well, I don't think he's handled it well. He's definitely not come out and opposed the administration's policies. And and what you're speaking to, by the way, is one of the great misperceptions about the Cuban community in Florida. There are probably about 500,000 Cuban Americans who are registered voters. This old perception that this was a rigidly right-wing group is wrong. The old Batistaistas, you know, in Miami, who, by the way, committed something like 600 acts of terrorism, political murders, and other things during the last 40 years in Miami, these guys are dying off. Jorge Mascanosa, the founder of the Cuban American National Foundation, who boasted of his terrorist acts, he's dead, thank God. But Martinez has made a very disturbing action. He's aligned himself with a group called the Cuban Liberty Council, which is the right wing split off from the Cuban American National Foundation, and I think that's the wrong signal to send to the younger Cubans, because what you're speaking about is that the new generation of Cubans are far less likely to be doctrinaire right-wingers than their grandparents are. And I don't even think their grandparents. I'm from Miami originally, born there, five generations from there. I think that this is a big mistake by Martinez to align himself with the old guard in Miami as opposed to addressing the young Cubans.
Plus, it doesn't help the base that he had, because he's originally from the Central Florida area and from Orlando. Doesn't help the base of the growing Puerto Rican communities of Central Florida, who really don't share the same viewpoints as do the some of the Cubans in South Florida.
Oh, absolutely, and I think your groups in Florida. Cubans, increasing numbers of Hispanics, Latin Americans from all over. You know, Miami is 62%. 62% of the residents of Miami are foreign-born.
John Sugg, on that note, we have to leave it there. Senior editor of Creative Loafing, we thank you very much for being with us. And that does it for the show. Congratulations to our producer, Mike Burke, for the reversing of the curse for the Red Sox win. We can now safely say that in this Yankee city of New York. And to Mike DeFilippo, who had all the charges dismissed for peddling while black, that is, riding his bicycle while being an African-American. That does it for the show. Our producers are Mike Burke, Shrivo Dolkadus, Anna Nogar, Elizabeth Press, John Hamilton, Jeremy Scahill, Mike DeFilippo, and Ryan Abernathy are our engineers. I'll be in Stony Brook on November 3rd at the Wang Center and on November 4th at Stanford Kresge Auditorium. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez for another edition of Democracy Now!